2. Encounter with Science. I was born into a family of simple farmers who used cattle to plow their field, and when the barley was harvested, used cattle to trample the grain out of the husk. Perhaps the only objects that could be described as technological in the world of my early childhood were the rifles that local warrior nomads had probably acquired from British India, Russia, or China. At the age of 6, I was enthroned as the 14th Dalai Lama in the Tibetan capital, Lhasa, and embarked upon an education in all aspects of Buddhism. I had personal tutors who gave me daily classes in reading, writing, basic Buddhist philosophy, and the memorization of scriptures and rituals. I was also given several senchap, which literally means philosophical assistants. Their primary job was to engage me in debate on issues of Buddhist thought. In addition, I would participate in long hours of prayers and meditative contemplation. I spent periods in retreat with my tutors and sat regularly for 2 hours at a time, 4 times a day, in meditation session. This is a fairly typical training for a high lama in the Tibetan tradition, but I was not educated in math, geology, chemistry, biology, or physics. I did not even know they existed. The Potala Palace was my official winter residence. It is a huge edifice occupying the entire side of a mountain and is supposed to have 1,000 rooms. I never counted them myself. In my spare moments as a boy, I amused myself by exploring some of its chambers. It was like being on a perpetual treasure hunt. There were all kinds of things, mainly the belongings of former Dalai Lamas and especially of my immediate predecessor, preserved there. Among the most striking of the palace's contents were the reliquary stupas containing the remains of the previous Dalai Lamas, reaching back to the 5th, who lived in the 17th century and who enlarged the Potala to its present form. Amid the assorted oddities I found lying around were some mechanical objects which belonged to the 13th Dalai Lama. Most notably were a collapsible telescope made from brass, which could be attached to a tripod, and a hand-wound mechanical timepiece with a rotating globe on a stand that gave the time in different time zones. There was also a large stash of illustrated books in English, telling the story of the First World War. Some of these were gifts to the 13th Dalai Lama from his friend Sir Charles Bell. Bell was the Tibetan-speaking British political officer in Sikkim. He had been the 13th Dalai Lama's host during his brief sojourn to British India when he fled in 1910 at the threat of invasion by the armies of the last imperial government of China. It is curious that exile in India and the discovery of scientific culture are things bequeathed to me by my most immediate predecessor. For the 13th Dalai Lama, as I later found out, this stay in British India was an eye-opening experience, which led to a recognition of the need for major social and political reforms in Tibet. On his return to Lhasa, he introduced the telegraph, he set up a postal service, built a small generating plant to power Tibet's first electrical lights, and established a mint for the national coinage and the printing of paper currency. He also came to appreciate the importance of a modern secular education and sent a select group of Tibetan children to study at Rugby School in England. The 13th Dalai Lama left a remarkable deathbed testament which predicted much of the political tragedy to come and which the government that succeeded him failed to understand fully or to heed. Among the other items of mechanical interest acquired by the 13th Dalai Lama were a pocket watch, 2 film projectors, and 3 motor cars, 2 baby Austins from 1927 and a 1931 American Dodge. As there were no drivable roads across the Himalayas or in Tibet itself, these cars had to be disassembled in India and carried across the mountains by porters, mules, and donkeys before being put back together again for the 13th Dalai Lama. For a long time, these were the only 3 automobiles in all Tibet, and pretty useless they were since there were no roads outside Lhasa on which one could drive them. These various items, the telltale signs of a technological culture, exercised great fascination on a naturally curious and somewhat restless boy. There was a time, I remember very clearly, when I would rather fiddle with these objects than study philosophy or memorize a text. Today I can see that these things were in themselves no more than toys, but they hinted at a whole universe of experience and knowledge to which I had no access and whose existence was endlessly tantalizing. In a way, this book is about the path to discovering that world and the wonderful things it has to offer.